Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Chef's Story. I'm Dorothy Cann Hamilton from the International Culinary Center, and today I have a very great, sexy, handsome chef, European chef with me, Chef Kurt Guttenbrunner of the famed Michelin-starred Walsay restaurant here in New York, and you may know him from Café Zabarsky in the New Museum. Many years ago when that opened, but he's still overseeing that. Blue Gans, and his latest is Café Cristal for the Swarovski crystal stores, and also the beer gardens at the Standard Hotel, both here, and there's going to be another one, I believe, in L.A. But anyway, Kurt, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me here.
And first of all, congratulations. You just became an American citizen last Friday.
Thank you. I'm very, very proud of being American. I had my swearing party swearing event on Friday morning, 8:30, and I called my daughters, they're on vacation in France right now, and little Lou said to me, "Daddy, I'm so proud of you, and next time you come back to New York, they're going to say the same thing to you to say to me, welcome home."
Oh, and I just, that gives me chills.
It's a very important step in my life. I want to vote. I want to be part, as I already am in this country.
Okay, well, let's get into your background. So you were born in Austria, right? So tell me about where you grew up.
Correct. Well, I grew up in a little village, 2,000 people, an hour and a half outside of Vienna. Emperor Franz Josef had a castle there for his daughter Marie Valerie, so we still have the Habsburg living around there, and fishing. We basically ate what we had in the garden or in this little, you know, we had our own pigs and chickens and eggs
Sounds delicious.
Made our own jams, kept everything in a sandstone cellar over the winter time, and a lot of apples and pears in this area. And
what got you into cooking? Were your parents great cooks? Your mother, your grandmother?
Or? Well, my dad used to build hydroelectric companies on the Danube.
Oh.
So green energy, you know, many, many, many years ago. Uh-huh. My mom raised us three children, and what got me into cooking, I believe that I'm afraid of heights. And, you know, in Europe, it's not that you call a plumber. It's like you have to take, in my time, you have to take care of it yourself. And every time, you know, my dad took my little brother walking up on the roof. You know, the roofs are not flat in Austria. So I just ended up with my mom and my grandmother in the kitchen because they couldn't take me up.
By default.
Yeah. So I had to help
in
making food for the real man, yeah. Right?
So,
and I enjoyed this. And I also think that, you know, there's a song from John Cale and Lou Reed. It's a small town.
Mm-hmm.
When you're growing up in a small town.
Yeah, yeah.
So, wonderful song I admire. And I think that unconsciously, I took something what my mom gave me, cooking and the interest in food, and just to get out of there.
To travel.
Just to leave. You know, I'm happy here. I could not imagine going back to Austria and live in Austria anymore. I'm just so happy.
So when you finally left the village, where did you go?
I went to boarding school, for culinary school, boarding school.
Ah.
And then I made my apprenticeship.
Is that typically how they do it in Austria, that they have boarding schools for
no.
it? Or your town was so small that you had a...
No. But, you know, they are like, you have several hotel and restaurant schools. And... I mean, there's two ways to do it. You know, either way you go to school and you graduate from school, or you make what you do. What I did, you go to school for 2 years, you make your internships, and then you make 2 more years of apprenticeship, and then you take your exam, and then.
So it's a long process.
4 years, yeah. You can call yourself a chef.
So is that the designation after 4 years that you're officially a chef?
Yeah.
So where was your first job?
After my apprenticeship, I went to work in Salzburg.
Oh, nice place.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I went to work in Salzburg, and, you know, the army is mandatory in Austria, so I when I was 19...
You had to go in the army?
8 months.
So did they put you in cooking?
Well, everybody has to, you know, we have to learn how to...
Carry
use
guns.
A gun and clean shoes. And, you know, not that, you know, Austria is neutral. Not that we have any enemies. So it's more like playing John Wayne, you know. So it was a lot of fun. I spent 6 weeks on the Czechoslovakian border up there.
You probably saw my relatives.
Little cold up there. And then, you know, they figure out where you can, you know, one is a mechanic, so we send him to drive the cars. And, well, you're a chef. Okay, we send you over there. Well, you have good education. We send you to cook for the generals. So I was lucky. After 6 weeks, I didn't have a helmet anymore. No more boots. And
no more cold?
No more cold. And I was... able
cooking for the general, like Escoffier. Didn't Escoffier cook for a general?
And we made everybody thinks, but you know, we make great money in the army.
Oh, really? How much money do you make?
Well, I forgot. It's like 30 years ago. But what happened is that all the officers, all the generals, they came with their families on the weekend to eat there because they figured out it's so great what these guys are doing there. And they all gave us great tips. And we had a baker there. One was a butcher. The other one was a waiter. And me, we were four guys there. We had a blast.
That's probably one of the best military stories I've heard. And pacifist as well.
And then I left to Switzerland.
Okay. And then you started in the Michelin starred restaurants at that time?
Well, I left it. I went to, you know... At this time, and I want to come back to the story about Lou Reed and John Cale, a small town. When I saw these little cruise ships going up and down on the Danube, and in the 70s and the 80s, all the big chefs used to work in Switzerland and on the big cruise ships. And you remember this?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was always something I wanted to do. And so that's why I left to Switzerland and
Oh, you mean to work on the ships?
Not
or the boats?
I never worked on a boat. But
I went to Switzerland.
You know, I want to do what...
You wanted to be the best.
Well, you know, I want to do what... But at this time was like, okay, you want to work with the best guys out there.
Mm-hmm.
So which brought me to Switzerland. And a good time in Grand-Montana in the south. Figured out that 50% of the French... I was taught in school, I forgot, and 50% the Swiss didn't adapt because they speak this.
I take it you're a natural skier, too.
Well, you know, Austrian. I still make jokes with my daughters when it's... It's true, you know, it's not that I'm telling them story, but, you know, when the Danube has high water, we had to go to school with the boat.
Oh, really?
And then when there's snow, you know, there's no snow day. We didn't have snow days.
Yeah.
And we had to shuffle snow before we walked to school for 20 minutes. And And my daughters always make fun of me and say, like, well, daddy's telling his stories. He had shoes when he first shoes when he was 12. But it was a different time, but I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. So now...
And then I went to Vienna.
You went to Vienna.
Yeah. When I came back from Switzerland, I met a chef who changed my life, who changed my view. He used to work in Munich for Heinz Winkel at the Tantris. He used to work in Vienna at the hotel restaurant 3 Rotisserie Prinz Eugen. That's mm-hmm. what the name. Vienna Matt. Doesn't exist anymore, but was a great at this time, 1986, number one restaurant in Austria, Michelin star, which is you know, when the French give us stars.
Outside of France,
yeah. It was a great time. So I met Erich, and I was so fascinated the way he was cooking that I promised myself that I will do the same thing.
And how was he cooking?
You know, if you know the cuisine at the Tantris, it's very simple. You know, just look at the product, buy the best product, use it in a gentle way, and, you know, just don't look at the kitchen as a breaker.
Okay, this is, you got to explain this to me, because you talk to every chef today, farm to table, look at, it's all about the product, they do it. But you're saying you went to a 3-star Michelin master, and in fact, you were doing that at home in your village. You were using all natural product, probably beautiful product, with your mother's cooking, your cooking. What made his cooking different, if he was doing it simply with natural product? It sounds like that's what everybody does. What was different?
I don't think it was so much different. I think that, you know, you need to find a mentor. You need to find somebody who your thoughts are going along, you know? Your techniques, the way he was cooking it. You know, it was 1984. Just roll back. What happened here in 1984? Yeah, I remember the first time I saw the green market up there when I came to the States, and look at it now. You know, we went a long way, but I was very, very lucky, because when I was in Munich or also in Vienna, you know, we had these people going to Rangis 2 times a week, you know.
In a truck? Rangis is the big market outside of Paris, yeah.
I mean, think about it. We were buying crème fraîche, goats, strawberries, fraise de bois, butter, whatever you want, fish, at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night when it came from the market. And at about this time, there were 2 3-star Michelin restaurants in Munich, and one is the Aubergine, Eckert Witzigmann, and the other one is Tantris, Heinz Winkler. And there was one company that did this. And we always were like, he has to come to us first, you know, before...
So you get the pick.
It was always a little competition. Yes, it's nice when you have cases of turbo out there and you can pick the 5 you want.
I see. That's what really got you...
You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
I mean, you know how much I miss the fish market down here? It was the best... I understand it's convenient in Hans Point up there, but for us,
right.
They took the farm a little too far away from the table.
That's right. So how did you get to the States? And what drove you to the States?
Well, I think small town, you know. Coming back
New York is not a small town.
No, but coming to the song I love so much, you know, after Munich, I wanted to do something else. And at the Tantris, it was very strict. The entire team was together for almost 2 years. There were 200 applications for the 15-20 jobs that they were available a year. And it's not like, oh, I'm quitting right now. You had to go to the chef and you had to ask him permission. I said, well, you know, I want to stop by summertime. And usually you always have to tell him where you're going, you know. And then he always said to me, you got to go to a place which has future. It's like, oh, my God, everything I gave him, he said no. And then I called my chef in Vienna and I said, listen, I need to do something. 2 years, countries, I want to see something else. And he said, well, my friend, he also worked for me, like you. He's the executive chef of Windows in the World. And there's a restaurant here. It's called Cellar in the Sky. And he needs a chef for Cellar in the Sky. And you want to do it? And I said, well, yeah, I want to do it. And I told the chef at the country, and he said, you're totally out of your mind, you know. I mean, you are totally out of your mind. 87, right? So, you go to New York, and it's not going to, you know, nothing. And it was tough, because Windows on the World up there, when you used to buy the goats and the butter and the turbo from the parking lot, right? And all of a sudden you're 107.
Right.
And you kind of B1 buys everything.
Yes.
It's a different story.
It's a different dynamic between food.
You have no idea how many times I went home crying because it was so hard. It was so hard for me. But I just didn't want to give up. You know, I knew there was something positive here. In the food world, in the restaurant world, it just started at this time, you know? It just started.
So what was your next step after Cellar in the Sky?
I worked for David. I worked
Boulay.
For David, yeah.
And how did you know him?
Austrian friend who used to work with David when David was at Vienna 79. You know, mm-hmm. You remember Vienna 79?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that had 4 stars from
there. Mimi Sheraton, yeah.
Yeah, that was a very... Yeah, that's a legendary restaurant.
Yeah, just 2 weeks ago, Peter Grüner was in town, so it's always nice to see him.
But anyway, you know what?
I met David because I didn't want to work up there anymore, but I didn't want to go home and call it a failure.
Mm.
I couldn't go home and say, well, you guys were right. Mm-hmm. It's not okay over there.
Mm-hmm.
So I met David, and the interview with David was very, very European. Instead of reading my resume, he took me into the walking bus and I said, look at the chickens I'm using. And look this. And it's like, that's exactly what I want to use. That's exactly where I come from.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a good time together.
Mm-hmm. How many years were you with David?
I left in 1990 when my son was born.
Hmm.
I thought that my son would be better off growing up in Europe like I did, and I just
okay. Well,
I
we're
just
gonna,
couldn't
we're,
manage anymore in
okay.
Europe.
So we're going to break here for a little commercial, and we'll be back and talk about what happened then.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Well, welcome back. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton, and today on Chef Story, I'm talking to Chef Kurt Guttenbrunner of Walsay, Cafe Sabarsky, Blue Gons, Cafe Crystal, and the Beer Gardens at the Standard Hotels. So, Kurt, you were just telling us about after, in the 80s, working with David Boulay and at Cellar in the Sky at Windows on the World, that you went back to Europe because of your son. So how long were you back there, and how did you get back to New York?
Well, I lived 5 years in Munich. I went back to the Tantris family. And for me, New York was like a book I didn't finish. So I came back here every vacation. I came back and worked with David in 1995. I decided to come back for good. And so I moved back, worked for David again, was the chef at the Monkey Bar with Peter Glaser at this time. And then was lucky that I met my partner, Jack Desari, at the soccer field, at our children's soccer field.
Oh, and really? That's where you met?
I was the coach, and his son was on my team, like my son. And he said, whenever you want to open your own restaurant, keep us in mind. And then the twins were born in 99, and Tess and Roman. And so I wanted to open my restaurant. I said, Jack, you know what? I want to open my restaurant out. And he says, okay, here, I'm going to give you $1 million.
Wow.
And find a space. So, and I found this wonderful corner in the West Village. And it's a landmark. We renovated it for a year.
Wow.
It was the former Black Sheep. There was a restaurant mm-hmm. there 25 years. It was mm-hmm. called the Black Sheep. And so we renovated everything. Mm-hmm. Opened in 2000. Mm-hmm. I had, my birthday is July 18. And I had no money left. And nothing. No money for friends and family. Just, I had to open on July 14, Pasti Day, with a French wife at this time.
Fireworks.
yeah. And, well, another great song. I used to, I love music. I like yeah. Tom Waits, and I grew up with CCR. And before we opened, you know, there's a song called Centerfield. And it's called Put Me in Coach, I'm Ready to Play. And I used to blast this all day long. And then when we opened the doors, you know, everybody was so happy, and it was a good team. And we gave New York something what they didn't expect from us Austrians. We gave them food and what we call in Austria, by the turn of last century, we call it Gesamtkunstwerk. When all the elements play together.
Mm-hmm.
The element of art, architecture, food, wine. Mm-hmm. And we gave them something what I think that wasn't expected, you know. No Lederhosen, no Mozartwerk, no, you know, no yeah. cliché.
Yeah.
We came up sharp, sexy, modern.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it was, I think, the biggest compliment for my food I ever got was when Bill Grimes said, New York never knew about Austrian food, and now we can't live without it.
Wow.
It was 6 weeks after I opened Walsia, and I was just like, oh my God, you know?
And now you have a Michelin star.
See, yes. And then Sabaski.
All kinds of echoes. And Sabaski, tell us about that.
You know, if you do the right thing will happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Vienna, and I bought my Tonnet chairs in Vienna.
Mm-hmm.
And they're out of those chairs. And Ronald Lauder went to Vienna, too, and bought his Tonnet chairs for the museum. But we both didn't know from each other and of each other. And then the president of Tonnet said to Ronald, he said, well, there's a young guy, just came a young guy in last week. He bought 70 Tonnet chairs and bar stool. And now you are here, and since 30 years, nobody bought original Tonnet chairs for a commercial space. So Ronald came back. He called George Lang, Café des Artistes, mm-hmm. and he said, let's go down and let's see what the guy is doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't even open, right? Mm-hmm. And I showed him the Josef Hoffmann lamps I got in there, and the Tonnet chair, and the minimalistic architecture. And he said, get in the car. I'm going to show you what I'm doing. So he showed me the museum, which was under construction. Annabel Seldorf, a German architect, worked on it for 4 years.
The new museum we're talking
Neue
about.
Neue Galerie. Yeah. Not the new museum.
Neue Galerie. Okay, stand corrected.
He said, I promised my partner, Serge Sabarsky, died in 1997, that I will make the best Viennese coffee house outside of Vienna, and you're going to do it for me. I said, okay, sir, let me go and open my restaurant, and then I will do so. Mm-hmm. And which I did, you know.
But the gallery was actually a museum.
The gallery is a museum.
It's not like an art gallery.
It's Ronald Lau's private museum for Austrian and German art. We show a lot of this year. Just finished on Monday the big Klimt exhibition, 150 years of Gustav Klimt.
Uh-huh.
And
it's on Fifth Avenue.
Fifth Avenue and 86, right between the Guggenheim and the Metropolitan.
So to find a jewel of a coffee house inside of a gallery that's
a museum. It's a museum, right?
It took New York by storm.
Well, you know, once again, we changed. We changed New York. Café Sabarsky was the first museum restaurant who received a 2-star New York Times rating.
Mm-hmm.
If you look what came afterwards, you know, the Guggenheim changed their, the MoMA, the Metropolitan.
Mm-hmm.
We changed the view of museum dining with what we did with Neue Galerie and Café
Sabarsky.
So
what was it like to do a coffee house in New York?
Well, you know, we are born with coffee and cake and strudel. It's just natural. And you know, I remember when you know, Mrs. Lauda said to me before we opened, and she said, oh, Kurt, I'm so worried about you. Who's going to come and look at this art and eat this food? And then it was like the first Sunday. I came up there at 10 o'clock, and people were standing like on 86 and down on Fifth Avenue. And after this, we never had to worry that nobody wanted to see this art and eat this food.
So how did you start?
One more thing, okay. Because it was a very, very, we opened Sabarsky 1 month after 9/11.
Oh.
And having a restaurant down there.
Walsee,
in the West Village, was pretty, pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
I only closed one day. I only closed on September 11th. And on September 12th, 8 o'clock in the morning, I was at the restaurant, and I just didn't know what to do.
And you had worked at Windows on the World, in the World Trade Center.
Right.
That must have been emotionally very hard, too.
Well, I saw the second one flying in out of my window, and it's... Long story short, Lou was walking up on 11th Street, Lou Reed, and he said, Kurt, everything is closed, Lori is out of town, and then there's no... breakfast. Like, let's sit down and let's have breakfast. And there were a couple other friends of Lou were there, and we sat down and I cooked eggs and coffee. And I said to Lou, I said, "What are we going to do?" And he says, "Well, you know, we just go. Don't worry about it. Open. We're all going to be there." September 12th, we did 45 covers, it was very important for me to keep everybody employed. Mm-hmm. And keep on going with this, and it was very important for me to look ahead at Café Sabarsky and Neue Galerie and to have something positive going on with opening a new restaurant, and that's what we did.
Well, so tell me how Blue Guns came about.
You know, David and Karen Wartok?
Oh, of course, Chantrell,
okay.
Yeah.
Right, their daughter and my son went to school together, and I was.
And your children have networked for you better than anyone I know.
You know, I was working at Boulay, and Chanterelle was right there, and David and Karen opened a restaurant called Le Cinque, and I loved what they did over there. Bill Katz did a phenomenal job with the vaulted ceiling and the art posters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to come back to the Gesamtkunstwerk, why this is so important for me. I was walking the dogs, and there was a sign out there, we're going on vacation this time of the year, right? Okay, 7 years ago. And I said, okay, great. And it came Labor Day, and it was still going on vacation. And then I called Karen. I said, Karen, what are you doing? And then she said, well, we want to sell it. And I said, don't sell it. Take it off the market. I'm going to take it. And it was during my separation from Yasmina, and I called my lawyer and I said, listen, I'm going to open another restaurant. He said, are you totally out of your mind? The last thing you can do right now is make something new. It's good. I said, no, I need to do this. Because if somebody else walks in there and has no appreciation of these posters, they will be gone, and I'm not going to let this happen. I just took Blauigans because of the posters in there.
Wow.
And they killed me at the beginning. Yeah. It was like the media said, oh, what the hell he thinks he is? He doesn't change anything. Yeah. But the reason was like, well, I changed the food. Mm-hmm. There was no reason to change the sink bar.
Mm-hmm.
There was no, I mean, the posters are so beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, I just, mm-hmm. adding more mm-hmm. makes me happy. Mm. And all my restaurants need to have a connection to art and architecture, and that's what I call Gesamtkunstwerk, when all the elements play together. And you know the difference between my restaurants and my house?
What?
In my restaurants, there's money involved. Otherwise, it's the same.
It's the same thing. I think that's probably why on September 12th, you were able to get 45 people to come in, because there's a real sense of someone being home in your restaurants, a real personality.
Thank you.
You know, a real comfort. Without being comfort for this tremendous elegance and sophistication. But tell me then, the beer gardens at the Standard Hotel, they're a little different.
Well, you know, once again, you know, we changed a lot of things with doing this kind of beer garden up there at the Standard Hotel.
Andre Balazs.
Yeah, Andre Balazs wanted to have a beer garden underneath the Highline. So he talked to me about it, and I say, well, can we work together on this to make something sexy, cool, simple? And, you know, I spoke to my friends, Olivia Sibon, she's one of the owner of the Pittsburgh Brewery, and said, Olivia, I want to do this beer garden. I want to keep it really simple. I want to do it exactly the way we do it in Europe. I have Bitburger Licher and Köstritzer there. I have sausages there from Charlie and Weber. I have the pretzels there. The grill is so busy. The kitchen is very small over there. There's no way that we can do something else over there. And you know, I think that when you go to a beer garden in Germany, then you don't have 30 different kind of beers, and I really don't like it. Beer is just good when you turn it as fast as possible, and why should I have 30 kind of beer? It's like there's no point on it. It's just different kind of brands, but it's if you cover the base with a wheat beer, with a pilsner, and with the dark beer, that's it. You know, you gotta make a decision, and I think the simplicity of the beer garden and the tickets, the idea I had of
tell us about the tickets.
Well, I believe that, you know, when you walk into the Standard Beer Garden, mm-hmm. you have to buy a ticket. Mm-hmm. So for the ticket, you can get a sausage, salad, or a beer. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a little bit like Las Vegas. You know, there's no money involved, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. You've got your tickets. And
you got your tickets, and you go to the waitress, and right. you give. Don't forget to give her a tip. But you give her the ticket, and she's going to give you order to the chef, and he's giving you whatever you want. Makes communication, which is the importance in a beer garden.
Communication.
Well, a beer garden is about communication. Mm-hmm. People are sitting together on long tables.
Yeah.
It's
casual but delicious, and it's natural too because you're outside.
Yeah, you know it.
Did you have fun doing it?
I love it. I mean, we just opened last year. We opened one in LA.
Yeah, you gonna open more?
Let's see.
All right. Well, let's see. We're gonna take another break here, and when we come back, we're gonna talk about a lot of stuff.
Thank you.
HeritageRadioNetwork.org is the most trusted media outlet for real, quality conversations about food. That experience will come to life at our first annual members-only fundraiser party on September 9th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Enjoy the best food in the world from talent including Michael Anthony, award-winning chef from Gramercy Tavern, Brooks Headley, award-winning pastry chef from Del Posto, Shauna Pacifico at Back 40 West, sustainable seafood from sea to table, and much more, including drinks made by Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues, craft beer from Greenpoint Harbor Brewery, wine from Cane Vineyard and Winery in the Napa Valley, and plenty more. Radio is back, and this will be a special, exclusive experience in the back garden of Roberta's that you don't want to miss. September 9th, 5 to 8 p.m. Buy tickets at heritageradionetwork.eventbrite.com.
Everybody should go to that, by the way. September 9th. I am. I'll be there. You'll meet some Chef Story people. So welcome back. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton at Chef Story, and today I'm talking to Kurt Guttenbrunner. And we've just like tiptoed through his beer garden, but there's one cafe I have not been to, which is down in Soho, so I have no excuse. Café Cristal, which is in the Swarovski. My pronunciation.
It's okay.
Swarovski.
I can see veal and venison, and my when my daughter said, "Daddy, say strep throat." Or the dentics.
Yeah. Okay.
You make a lot of fun.
Yeah. You got to go to this guy's restaurant. So, I mean, he makes you feel so at home. So tell us about Café Cristal. I can say
Cristal. Cristal. Swarovski is from Austria. Nadia Swarovski has a project which is called Crystal Palace. Mm-hmm. She commissions lighting designers to make a modern interpretation of light fixtures. Tom Dixon, we have beautiful Tom Dixon chandeliers in there. And I wanted to do something there. What I did on the Upper East Side with Café Zabarski, I want to do in Soho with Café Cristal. Marble tables, Josef Hoffmann fabric from Backhausen in Vienna, Tonitz chairs. Julian, my friend Julian Schnabel, gave me artwork from
Lou Reed, Julian Schnabel, all these friends.
No, but
I've got to hang out with you.
That's true. I mean, it's nice.
Yeah. I mean,
it's nice that you have. I'm proud to have friends.
Yeah.
And I'm proud to have friends. I can ask. I said, Julian, you know, we went over there on Mother's Day. The kids were with mom, and Julian and I. We went over there and we looked at the space, and we said, okay, what are we going to put in there? And yes, I don't have $600,000 just to put in artwork.
Uh-huh.
I don't have it.
Uh-huh.
But there's $600,000 of artwork in there. And I don't know how many. Tom Dixon, well, I don't even know what the. Yes, it's nice.
Yes. No, but it's home for you. These are your friends. This is.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, it's also. I think that people want to be in an environment and enjoy art and food and good conversation. As I said, the only thing it's different is there's money involved and there's no money involved, right?
Right.
And Cristal is over my little wine bar, you know?
Yeah.
I have a little wine bar next to Walse, and you know, all the photographs in there are Clifford Ross, and Clifford Ross's work I just adore. He takes these photographs of the ocean during the hurricane, and they are so powerful. It's like, you know, like there's a powerful bottle of wine you have, and there's power there, and his pictures, they just give me the same kind of feeling.
Wow. So let me tell you, we had some previous conversations, and one of the things we were talking about is water. And, you know, I have to make an admission here that I've switched to drinking filtered water in restaurants because of the sustainable carbon footprint of taking a bottle of water from 3,000 miles away. And you brought up some very interesting points. Do you want to talk about maybe us rediscovering bottled water and why?
Well, as a Austrian... I had I can cook Austrian food. I can have an Austrian wine list. But I never had Austrian or German water. And it was always a piece missing, right? So I was looking for Austrian water or German water, and I got connected to Gerolsteiner. Gerolsteiner comes out of the Eifel near Frankfurt in this area. And what really fascinated me about this is that this natural water runs over the stones which they're there since thousands of years and naturally adds mineral mm-hmm. to the water. Mm-hmm. If you look at a bottle of Gerolsteiner water, there's 2,500 milligrams of minerals in there. Mm-hmm. 2,500 milligrams. 1,800 milligrams are bicarbonate, mm-hmm. which naturally prevents you from heartburn.
So if you suffer from heartburn,
you drink a bottle of this water and
it's going to neutralize you?
Correct.
That's interesting.
It's important.
Yes.
It's important. I think that we got to look at...
Do all waters have that capability?
Well, there's an app. There's an iPhone app. It's called My Water, My Massa. And it's actually very interesting because you can compare all these different kind of waters. How many minerals are in there? How much sodium is in there? And yes, minerals are important. Go running... whatever you lose, and then you add filtered water, how many minerals you add to your body?
None.
Correct.
So we need that. I had a friend who imported some water from Italy because if you drank a bottle of it, it was as much calcium as a woman needed, and you didn't have to take pills, and it was natural calcium.
Correct.
And I think we've lost, we take vitamins, but, getting your minerals through water. What about this whole water issue? I mean, water is going to become very scarce and with every decade. I mean, do you really think that there's going to be enough water for...
Well, I think that there's a lot of people there investing in water. I think that water is going to be the most important thing in our life one day.
Really?
I believe so. I believe so. And I read something very interesting in the science, a New York Times science page about the windmills and how the heat, the electricity which is generated can generate water, because it's like this very simple, like, the bathroom mirror, and then
condensation
runs through filtration. And if we believe in natural energy, if we believe in saving our planet, mm-hmm. then we gotta start little by little, bring awareness, give it to our children, and make them be aware.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you is, you have 5 restaurants now, and how much time do you really have to cook in them, and who's cooking in them, and how do you feel about that? A lot of chefs miss cooking in the restaurants full time.
I not only have 5 restaurants, I also have 4 children. I'm very, very, very proud of them. And it comes a time, I played a lot of soccer when I was young, and it comes a time, I believe, where a good player can be also a good coach. And I think it is more important for me now to have good players in my restaurant. I want to be a good coach. I want to spend also some time with my children. It's so important, how but every time when I walk them to school and I hold the hand of the little one, she's 10, and Lou, and I said, Lou, please don't grow up. I miss your little hand. I will miss your little hand so much. And, time flies. Mm. And I always want to be there for my children. They're the most important things, the most important mm-hmm. people in my life. And I want to give it to them that they have me too, Whenever they are with me, half the time of the year, I always cook for them, except I have an event. I think that it makes me happy. It makes me happy to, and yeah. Well, I have to work in the office. I have to do this. I have to do this. I have great chefs. You know, Danny also works. He's with me at the Walser since 4 years. He spent 8 years at the Tantris. I mean, we know the same. We have the same philosophy. Leo is with me since 4 years too. Thomas in Austria, and he's the chef at Blauegans. Jesus Zapaski is with me since 11 years. It is important to have a
good team. You have two families and two sets of children. Tell me something.
Yeah.
Have you lost the travel bug?
No.
Where someplace? Where will we find you next year?
Well, you know, I there's a lot of things. You know, I wanted to be American because it's important for me to be part of this country. I want to vote. I want to support what's going on. I want to support more what's going on here in the city. You know, I don't agree with the health system, the grading thing. I think it needs to be modified. The grading is okay. Mm-hmm. The handling is wrong.
Mm-hmm. So you don't object to having the grades outside.
The grading is that I agree with the grading, but you know, you give me 5 points because the mint is in a Ziploc bag. Really? Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like a traffic cop giving you tickets because you're going over there. You want to put money in the meter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you come back and you say, "Well, I'm just getting money."
Yeah,
I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
It's just what is the difference in health
with the
mint in the Ziploc bag? And my favorite story. I want to tell you the story about the rabbit.
Okay, we got it, and then we're gonna have to say goodbye.
No.
Tell this story.
So a couple of years ago, right, I had a health inspection. Right, and the lady came in there, and she looked at my menu, and I have the rabbit spätzle on my menu since 10 years. It's a classic. People love it. She says, "Show me the invoice of the rabbit." So I have central office. I can fax it to you tomorrow. No, 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 no. I want to see it now.
And what time is this?
10:30 at night. And I said, "Well, I don't have it." And I said, "Why you ask for the invoice of the rabbit and you don't ask for the veal or the beef or whatever?" It says, "Because somebody in my house has a rabbit as a pet. And who tells me that you're not buying it from her?" I say, "Excuse me? 10 points and thousands of dollars I had to spend on legal fees because of a pact here?" So that's why, you know, I'm very outspoken about this.
Well, we're not going to go any more down that road.
What I
want to say is, if you haven't been to any of Kurt's restaurants, you really have to go. It's a very differentiated experience. Elegant, beautiful, delicious. The food is homey but minimalistic, and the environments, if you haven't caught on by now, this man loves his rooms, and they are just gems to sit in. Kurt, I can't thank you enough for coming today, taking yourself away from the empire and your kids.
Thanks, Rosie.
But this has been a wonderful opportunity to talk to you today. And I want to thank everyone, and especially our great producer here at the network, Jack Inslee, and our assistant producers, Heidi Tickle and Joe Sevier. And this is Chef Story, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.